At the top of our program, with just a few days left in the 2013 legislative session, the Michigan House is working its way through a cluster of controversial proposals. Our next guest plays a key role in several of them. One package of bills calls for significant education reforms, including a plan to hold back Michigan third graders who aren't reading at that level. Another would impose a letter grading system on school districts statewide. Yet another addresses the regulation of so-called issue ads. The bills are before the House Education and Ethics, House Education and Ethics and Elections Committees, and conveniently enough, Republican State Representative Lisa Postumus-Lyons chairs both. Welcome to Current State.
Hi, Mark. Good morning. You get a twofer with this one.
I absolutely do. And we appreciate your coming on the program here. Last month, Republican Secretary of State Ruth Johnson proposed an administrative rule change that would mandate public disclosure of donors behind so-called issue ads. These are the ads that don't explicitly say who to vote for or who not to vote for, and they constitute a significant percentage of the political ads out there. Where do you stand on disclosure of funding for issue ads?
Well, first and foremost, as we deal with our campaign finance reform package, I want to make sure, above all, we are keeping transparency as the paramount issue here. And I think the bill that we have before us in the legislature actually hits the nail on the head for the most part. I believe the Secretary of State, while well-intentioned, really trampled people's free speech and potentially safety with her ruling. And so that's why I want to make sure the campaign finance report or the campaign finance reform bills we have, you know, make sure that we are addressing the real costs of elections and really making sure people are aware of, you know, we're transparent to them. That's why as we double the contribution limits in this bill, we're tripling reporting requirements. And as it relates specifically to issue ads, I was proud to offer an amendment that got adopted in committee that would require an entity paying for those issue ads to disclose themselves as the ones that paid for them. I think that's certainly fair while still protecting people's rights to free speech.
It's a free speech issue primarily for you. If the individual donors, however, are not disclosed, a lot of people are not going to view this as a realistic compromise. What do you say to those critics?
Well, you know, I don't think we need to compromise transparency when we're dealing with this, but we do need to respect people's free speech and their participation in the political process. You know, as we deal with some controversial issues, there actually can become a safety issue and a privacy issue. We saw
how so, you know, how safety that surprised me. How might safety be involved in this?
Sure, you start disclosing these donors, and all of a sudden there's targets on these people. You know, you go to a website, and there's it's an automatic hit list. Additionally, we saw the IRS target specific donors to, like a Tea Party organization. That's very real, and that's very possible should we enact what Ruth Johnson, what the Secretary of State is asking us to do. That's why I think it is a reasonable compromise that the public know the organization that is behind each of these ads. And I think knowing that gives these ads credibility that they deserve, or, you know, something to brush off is really not, you know, not something that has any weight behind it or merit behind it.
You really fear, though, you really fear that if a person's identity is disclosed as having contributed to a particular campaign, that it could reach the point where their safety is actually compromised. I mean, we all expect backlash to certain political positions and political opinions. You actually take that to the level of fearing for someone's personal safety.
I think that threat is very real, and it's possible, and just the possibility that it exists could prevent people from participating in this process, and that would be very unfortunate.
Now, this bill also doubles contribution limits for both individuals and PACs. This will affect probably only a small fraction of the most affluent political donors. According to the Michigan Campaign Finance Network, just 820 Michiganders gave the maximum amount in the 2010 governor's race. Why is it important to increase political contribution limits?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I believe that we, while we are increasing limits that have not been increased since 1977, Mark, that's before I was born, by the way. You know, the cost of these campaigns has increased exponentially. Had we gone with the rate of inflation, these limits would have been 50% more than what we're proposing here today. So we wanted to make sure that we are recognizing the cost of elections today, but still being reasonable with the limits that we're setting. So I think this meets that mark. And additionally, with these contribution limits, with the increase in contribution limits, we're also tripling the transparency by ensuring that candidate committees have to now report on the off-year elections three times a year.
So this bill would double the contributions while keeping the funders of the issue ads anonymous. What do you say to critics who fear that all this additional money put into politics will simply lead to greater expectations from the donors once their person gets into office?
I think the best way to limit money in politics is to limit the size of scope of government. This bill doubles the limits, triples the transparency, and requires that issue ads, the responsible paying party of issue ads, are disclosed. And I think that's what the public deserves.
What do you make of the claim that there's from many people across the political spectrum that there's simply already too much money in politics?
I think, again, if you want to get rid of the money in politics, we need to make sure that we reduce the size and scope of government. That's the simplest way to keep special interests out of the process. But we also have to balance that with allowing people their free speech and their participation in the process as well.
Is there a point? We're talking with State Representative Lisa Postumus Lyons, chair of the State House Education and Ethics and Elections Committees. Is there a point at which you could conceivably become concerned over the amount of money in politics?
I haven't seen that as of yet. I think we have a great system here in our democratic process where it costs. The ugly truth is, it costs money to run elections and to run a campaign. But nothing, especially in my experience, nothing beats hard work and grassroots efforts. The grassroots have a voice, and they make it known. And there's power at the grassroots level. And so I think we have to make sure that we keep that balance. And I think this bill still provides that.
Have you spoken with the governor's office on this? Do you have any idea what he is supporting or what he will support?
Yeah, they've got some changes that they're interested in making, and I actually think they make perfect sense. So I expect to, I expect there to be some discussion on disclosing the responsible party for robocalls, and I expect a big part of the discussion over in the House is as it relates to this bill is the issue of caucus committees spending money in primaries. That will be an issue that may change throughout the process.
And where do you stand on that?
I supported it initially, and as I kind of thought through it, what it really means, there are good arguments on both sides. First and foremost, caucus committees are the only entity that is prohibited from participating in a certain election, and so that's a large argument to remove that restriction. But at the same time, those caucus committees exist to help the caucus, and it can make the difference of maintaining a majority for the Republicans or the Democrats trying to take the majority away. And if you're spending that in a primary, there's less incentive for incumbents and candidates to take care of themselves. And I think that's a very weighty decision. So I expect I expect that to be discussed further, and I'm actually leaning towards making sure that we are protecting the caucus as opposed to individual candidates.
Before we move on to education, just let me ask you about the timeline on this measure. We're down to a relatively few number of days left in the session. When do you expect action on the campaign finance front?
Yeah, I expect action this week so that we can get it enacted before we break for the Christmas season and enter into a new year. We've got 3 session days left, and we've been, it's kind of been on the radar here for the last several weeks, and I think we can get that moving.
Let's move on to the reading proposal and these education proposals. The reading proposal would intensify efforts to teach reading prior to the third grade, but then it would hold kids back who are not at a third grade reading level in the third grade, as determined by the MEEP test, the standardized MEEP test. It would also exempt some students with learning disabilities and English as a second language students. You support this measure? Can you tell us why?
I firmly support the measure. We have a third of our kids in Michigan are not reading proficiently, and if we send them on, to continue their education journey without that fundamental foundation of reading, I think we're doing them a great disservice. We have, as you mentioned, there are good cause exemptions in the legislation that would prohibit retention. There are also, with regard to the assessments that used, while it is stated in the bill, the proficiency is determined in the state assessments. We also have a couple other options. Examples: schools can use their own reading assessments. I know my kids' public school uses Dibbles to measure how proficient and how proficient the kids are. They can also have students do a reading portfolio instead. So we're trying to provide different options. Right now, we also have an amendment on the bill, and I think this is very important to make sure that the department, the MDE, does not require assessments for students on subjects like social studies until after third grade, so that there can be a more emphasis in our classrooms on the reading component. Additionally, the bill is tie-barred to a Representative Stallworth bill that sets out early intervention and establishes programs to help those kids kind of catch up. We want retention to be the last resort, but at the same time, we don't want to move kids forward that don't have the foundation of reading. Up until third, I have a second and a third grader, so I'm kind of knee-deep immersed in this, as a parent. And up until third grade, these kids are really working to learn to read. And after third grade, it's really they are reading to learn, and we want to make sure our kids are ready for that.
I see Representative Stallworth is also proposing, he wants interventions strengthened, which is part of this package, but he also wants, tools to engage intervention at home. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I expect to see, as it goes through the process on the House floor or over in the Senate, I expect to be there some parental involvement components. And, we're still trying to work through what the details of that would mean. If a parent is insistent upon moving their child forward, recognizing that they aren't proficient in reading, we want to make sure that parent, has some accountability as well, all parties, the teacher, the parent, the student, and so we want to make sure that we're addressing that as well.
Are you confident you can wade through all of these wrinkles in this legislation in just 3 session days?
I want to make sure we're doing this the right way as opposed to a quick way. If it's not ready by the time we leave session on Thursday, then I think that's okay. We've done a lot of education reforms, and there's no one silver bullet. It's a culmination of different reforms that ensure quality and our students are prepared. But of all of them, this issue, I believe, has the potential to be the most transformational for individual students that we've done. And so I want to do it right.
What's your understanding of the approach that Michigan schools take now with regard to elementary students who are not reading at the level they should be? How often are they held back? How often does social promotion simply take over?
That's a good question. All schools operate differently in this, and currently it's the parents who have the final say in the retention aspect or whether the kids move on. I can speak from personal experience. I have a third grader who's very, very good at reading and, is reading above grade level, and I have a second grader who struggles and is just a little below or barely at benchmark for her grade level, and our school has this early intervention tool that she goes into a reading class and has special emphasis on that to help her get to where she needs to be. And a lot of schools do these and a lot of schools don't. And so we want to make sure that with Stallworth's bill that we have the tools out there for all schools to utilize.
You are the sponsor of the proposal to grade school districts with an A through F letter grade. And this would replace a color-coded system. What makes this a better way to assess a school district?
Well, as a parent, I don't know what a lime green means, but I know what an A means, and I know what a B means, and I know what an F means. So it's really about, on the one hand, it's about making sure that we're being clear and concise and transparent with the parents and the public where these schools are doing, in a way that these schools are doing well. As far as how the grade is determined, this really, the color-coded system was just convoluted, and once it became enacted, we had calls from so many superintendents complaining about how the system was set up, that we had quality schools who couldn't get, any higher than a yellow, which, to find out is, a middle of the road. So we wanted to make sure we were addressing the system as well, and this system is set up, primarily on a percentage of those kids in who are proficient and a percentage of those kids who are student growth. And student growth component is absolutely critical. And so I want to, as it relates to how the system is better, number one, it's more clear and concise for parents. And number two, it gives schools a real certain target to meet, and it's based on proficiency and student growth as opposed to more subjective data points.
Very good. We have covered a lot of territory. We appreciate it a lot. Republican State Representative Lisa Postumus-Lyons chairs the House Education and Ethics and Elections Committees. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mark. Have a good day.